Blog Talk Radio.
Join us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and listen to us at www.naturestalkshow.com.
Good evening, everybody. This is Ken McKinn. Welcome you to Nature's Talk Show tonight's The Monsters of Nature, along with Ken Borman. We've got a really cool subject here to talk about tonight. But first, excuse me.
Ken, hold on a minute. Ken Borman dropped out again.
Okay.
I'm
going to
try to call him on my phone, okay?
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and do the quick opening announcements here then, if that's cool. And we'll get Ken back on here. We're having a little bit of technical problems with dropping the call here. So, anyway, as soon as we get Ken back on, I want to invite everybody to go to our listeners to go to www.naturestalkshow.com so you can join in our live chat room. Ken Borman, as always, is in there to field questions and comments and stuff from our listeners here, because we've got a really interesting topic tonight. And also, before we get underway as well, we do want to make a real quick announcement that coming up at the Northeast Conference of Aquarium Societies coming up in April, that our own Nature's Talk Show will be there setting up a table. Ken Borman, Mary Fetters, and Tom Latz will all be there visiting with all the folks that attend the show. We're going to have some artwork on display that you can win by it's going to be raffled off, so you can go and check some of that out, artwork that I have done. There's going to be a lot of really cool guests, et cetera, there to show. Now, a couple years ago, I was a guest speaker at the NEC conference, and I just want to say the folks there made me feel right at home. I got to see some of my old killifish friends. I got to meet a lot of new people. They host a wonderful show, and Leslie Dix is a wonderful lady, and I wish I was going again so I could say hi to her. When you're there visiting at the NEC show, stop into our booth there and say hello to Ken, Mary, and Tom, and they'll be happy to talk with you and field questions. And as I said, too, you can check out some of the artwork that we're going to have there to raffle off to help support Nature's Talk Show. How are we doing on Ken, Mary? Okay, hopefully we're going to have Ken here real soon.
Okay, Ken, can you hear Ken now?
I'm right here.
Okay, I'm not
here. We are.
A phone, you guys, so hey. I'm going to push it under my pillow so you two can have a great show.
Okay, thank you, Mary. All right. Hello, Ken.
Hey. Yeah, further to what Ken was just saying, I'd love to meet any of our listeners. If you're over at the NEC show, call up. Talk to the short, fat guy with long hair, and that'll be me.
You know, what's funny is when we get together at a show coming up, I'm going to be a kind of a tall, chubby guy with long hair. So it's going to be fun. But at any rate, I've already invited our listeners to go into the chat room to talk about our subject. Now, our subject tonight, Ken, I think it's coming a good time to have this subject, and that, of course, is ectoparasites. We're coming up into the Northern Hemisphere here, springtime. Many people will start getting out, and some of these creatures, these monsters of nature that I really like to think are true monsters, that's some of the parasitic arthropods that actually feed upon humans, suck our blood, but they also are very bad about infecting us with diseases. And the first of these topics, Ken, I think we all talk about is the mosquito. What do you think?
I think that sounds like a good idea. They're ubiquitous everywhere, and you can hardly go without getting bitten by a female mosquito, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even out here where I live in the desert. Now, this what's really nice is we're not bothered by them here where I live very often. I mean, they're very, very, very rare up here on the high plains where I'm at. I live just a few miles east of the Rio Grande Valley here in central New Mexico. That's where I reside. And now, growing up, Ken, I was born and raised actually not too far from where you live, there towards the Midwest. And It was a, an area just north of Indianapolis, Indiana. I grew up around town and small towns around Muncie, Indiana, you know, so.
we're not too bothered with them here either, actually. There's usually a decent breeze blowing where I live, and that tends to keep them away a little bit. Unless you go looking for them in the swamps and things, like we do when we go collecting fish and amphibians.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember some of the places we lived at. One of my favorite homes we lived at was a farmhouse, just a little bit north of a little small farming community called Selma, Indiana. And mm-hmm. they were surrounded by woods, and there was a really nice woods across the street, but the problem with it was these woods were filled with mosquitoes. You know, I mean, in the springtime or during summer rains, there was low areas that would flood, and just, you know, these mosquitoes would breed across the street. And I remember many, many times, you know, having to get up, turn the bedroom light on, and go on a mosquito killing spree because they just drive you crazy, you know, just so many of them. And I remember going fishing many times where there would be outbreaks of these things. You couldn't wade through the weeds without stirring up thousands of them. I mean, they just start going, you know, in your eyes and in your ears, up your nose. You know, there'd just be so many of them getting caught in your hair. And I remember me and friends, some of the things we'd do when we'd go fishing is we'd have to take off running. And we'd run as far as we could through the rivers and stuff, you know, in the water, trying to get away from the clouds that we disturbed. And when we'd come to a place we wanted to fish, boy, you should see us try to sneak up the best we could on the bank and make sure we didn't bump a weed.
I know what you mean. At a local national park here, too, there is one spot where they don't mow the grass at all, and it's quite long. And if you walk through that, there's hordes of mosquitoes that you disturb, and they go for you.
Yeah, yeah. And there was a number of species, too, I remember seeing growing up. Now, this is kind of wild. I don't know whether you have this particular type as far north as you are, but I remember back in Indiana, there was one particular species of mosquito, and I never did try to see what particular genus it was, but these suckers were almost twice the size of a Culex mosquito. I mean, they were huge. And when they bit you, you know, it felt like they was driving one of them big old horse needles in you, you know?
Wow.
And their tone of their wings was lower, too, because, you know, they were bigger. And, oh, my gosh, these were some big mosquitoes. You know, there's many occasions. I remember going into a woods one time, and I got to the edge of it, and I started looking all around the ground and stuff, you know, and just seeing, you know, thousands of mosquitoes hovering, you know, just maybe a foot off the ground, flitting in and out of the sunlight pattern, you know. Stood there for a few minutes and left because I wasn't going to try to take photographs or anything, you know, fighting off these mosquitoes. And
I find it interesting that it's only the female that draws blood on you. Why? Is there any evolutionary advantage for that, Ken, that you can think of?
Well, I believe it's because of the richness of the blood. It helps their egg development. Because it seems like the female mosquitoes have to have that feeding of blood, the ones that do feed. They have to have that blood to stimulate their egg production. So, they have what they've done is they've capitalized upon a high, rich food source. Our mammalian blood, especially, is really rich, you know, in nutrients.
Yeah, you can't. That's a food source. It's just about perfect, isn't it? I guess.
Yeah. Well, think about how many animals feed upon blood. As a matter of fact, all the critters we're going to talk about tonight feed on us, you know?
Yeah.
We're their prey.
But with a lot of the species, it's the male and the female that feed on us, isn't it?
What's that?
With a lot of the species we're going to talk about tonight, it's the male and the female that feed on us, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas with the mosquito, it's only the female.
And now, another one of the critters we're going to talk about here in a little bit, we'll be talking about the ticks. I think on those, the females might be the only ones that feed, too, on some species.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that on those as well. But bed bugs and head lice, some of the other creatures like that, they male and female both. They set up colonies on us.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And
that's a good old
one. Oh, well, head lice and fleas usually never leave their host, you know, once they set up. So they're in it for the long term, but mosquitoes are, you know, they're interesting. Their development seems to go as far back, Ken, I think, almost as the Triassic period. We're looking over to, or at least the early Jurassic.
Right, and they certainly find a lot of them in amber, don't they?
Yeah, and a lot of their relatives, too, the different midges, because a mosquito is a type of midge. It's a type of fly. And
mm-hmm.
Now, this is kind of fun here because the mosquito, when it comes to one of our favorite movies that we like to talk about on our paleontology show, Jurassic Park, you know, they were going after mosquitoes in Mesozoic amber that could have fed upon dinosaurs, you know, and they were looking for dinosaur DNA and dinosaur blood. The only problem with DNA like that, though, is DNA has, even preserved like in amber, it has a bad habit. It's not a stable molecule. It's a real long chain molecule, and real long molecules tend to start breaking up into smaller parts, and that's what happens to deoxyribonucleic acid. It breaks apart. So, fun fantasy, but I think we're going to get a dinosaur. We're going to have to retrofit a bird. Yeah.
Which it is
now,
possible to do, we found out.
Yeah.
Of course, the other thing about mosquitoes, too, it's not just that they bite you and suck your blood, but they can give you different diseases, too, can't they?
You know, that's, I think, one of the things about mosquitoes. Mosquitoes, I think, have been responsible for some of the main plagues around the world in the past. You know, I believe mosquitoes were one of the things that was the main concern, wasn't it, Ken, back when they were building the Panama Canal, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, I believe so. And back in those days, they didn't have all the drugs that we have now, so it would have been a nightmare for all the workers down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yellow fever, malaria. Now, mosquitoes are, I think, are responsible for malaria around the world, and I think that's killed more people than just about any infection, I think.
I would think so, and the thing with malaria, too, once you've got it for life. It's always in your blood, unfortunately, and it can come back and attack you at any time. A friend of mine, Hucker Blair, he's had malaria a couple of times from different times he's had it, and even to this day, he can be working at his home in Italy, and all of a sudden, he could start feeling the effects of it.
Yeah.
And have to go to hospital.
Neil, malaria is a particularly nasty disease. It in itself is a parasite, you know. And one of the interesting things about it is it shows that it was actually a type of related to the plants, I believe. Has a chloroplast in it.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
You don't need in your system, isn't it?
God, when you look at some of the things that cause your headache, fever, shivering, joint pain, vomiting, hemolytic anemia, jaundice, hemoglobin in the urine, retinal damage, and convulsions. You know,
a little bit similar, I guess, when I was living in Australia. Even though I was living south of the Tropic of Capricorn, I got a disease that was normally from the tropics. I got dengue fever. And I think with climate change, like this was 30 years ago, but even then, the climate was changing, and all the animal vectors that carry all these different diseases were expanding out of the tropics and into the subtropical regions. And I was lucky enough, well, unlucky enough, to get bitten by a mosquito that had dengue fever. And I can assure you, you don't want that.
My gosh, when I'm sitting here looking at some of the stuff that dengue fever does, something, you know, it's like, man, this is, oh. And how do you believe you acquired that?
Well, I must have got bit by a mosquito that had the pathogen in its body.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else that could have happened.
I wasn't
traveling at the time, and it was summer, I remember that, so it's the right time of the year to get bit by a mosquito, but it hurt to breathe. I was laid up in bed for a week or two, and I couldn't move. It just hurt to move.
Wow.
So my wife at the time had to help me up out of bed to go to the bathroom. And I was a comparatively young man of 30, odd. So it's very debilitating. And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, actually.
Yeah, when you look at some of the stuff it does here, you know, results in bleeding, low levels of blood platelets, and this here blood plasma leakage. Oh my God, you know?
Yeah.
That's like.
You're hurt all the time, and you're so weak. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. I have another illness that caused me to be weak like that. I can understand, you know, being so weak that you can't hardly move. You know, going to the bathroom is rough because you don't have the energy. It's like, for those who've never had a disease that, you know, where you that wore out just by the disease, you know, it's hard to explain to them. You know, but I understand. You know, I can imagine that. You know, this would be you feel you're going to die. You're so wore out. You know, it's like I don't have
it was particularly bad, actually, in the beginning because I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And,
oh, my gosh. And
you just don't think of, well, where I was living at the time, I just didn't even think of dengue fever because it's not common in that area. But the equator than where I was. So I was just lucky. I eventually went in to see my local doctor, and he had experience in the tropics, in New Guinea, actually, working with the natives up there, and he'd seen it thousands of times. And he knew straight away. As soon as he saw me, he knew what it was.
Wow. So that really was a fortuitous huh?
It was, actually. If I had had a doctor who hadn't worked in the tropics, he might not have known either.
Oh, my gosh. He might have suffered a lot longer.
Yeah.
Wow, you know, that's the thing about these mosquitoes. You know, these mosquitoes they're really a nasty creature when it comes to that. You know, and they breed really rapidly. I've watched, practically everywhere I've lived, like I said, except here in this desert. It's about the only place I've not run too much into mosquitoes. But most, even the Rio Grande Valley down here, it's about 6.5-7 miles to the west of me. Mosquitoes there. I did not want to live in the Rio Grande Valley because when we lived up in the north part of near Albuquerque several years ago, it was bad. And there's things like West Nile virus and different other diseases. You know, moving up through with these mosquitoes. You know, even malaria is supposedly last I heard was making a comeback around the world again. You know, because of resistance to many of the drugs that were developed, you know?
Well, here in southwestern Ontario, we have West Nile virus.
Do you?
Every spring, you'll see the occasional dead crow around. And And if you see that here in this area, you're not supposed to touch them at all. You're supposed to contact the local council, and they'll come along and pick them up in hazmat suits, by the way. And
yeah.
And they send them away to be tested, and 9 times out of 10, they're carrying West Nile virus.
Yeah, and that mosquito to bird to human.
Yeah,
because
so,
we've got West Nile.
I think with the climate change that we're experiencing, the natural range of a lot of these insects is in widening out, isn't it?
I mean, it's bringing the disease-bearing ones further north, for sure. You know, it seems like a lot of the disease-bearing insects, mosquitoes, were mostly in tropical to subtropical. Because mosquitoes up in like Alaska. One show we were talking about the tundra and how mosquitoes, you know, just by the millions, they're so many, you know, they just clouds and clouds of them. And
of course, here in Canada, as you go up into the tundra regions, mosquitoes and black flies and
mm-hmm.
deer flies are really bad up there. And
yeah.
It's the same with Alaska, it would be. And there's some times of the year you just don't want to be outside at all.
Yeah, it's...
eating alive.
Exactly. You know, I mean, now, this is kind of funny. I think when we talk about arthropod saliva, you know, that's one of the things about these animals. They inject saliva into their bites to help... keep the blood flowing. It contains anticoagulants and other chemicals. There's approximately 20 or so, I think, of these proteins, you know. And so what we do, we get this histamine effect, you know, where our bodies are trying to fight off these proteins. But along with the saliva, you know, you get this deluge of these diseases because, and it's interesting because these diseases seem to congregate in these insect saliva glands, salivary glands, so
mm-hmm.
that it actually squirts it right. You know, it's these things are nothing but little airborne disease carriers, you know. They're just...
And, of course, you mentioned earlier, too, the same with the ticks. Of course, they're famous for, or infamous, for carrying Lyme disease, aren't they?
Yeah. And out here, there's Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
I wasn't aware of that, not having lived at anywhere near your way. What happens with that, Ken?
You know what?
Is it much the same as Lyme disease?
It's a bad viral disease. I know that it causes. I believe it causes muscle tissue problems. Problems with your joints, fever, pain. You know, it's not a very good disease. Fortunately, I don't think I've been in an area that actually has Rocky Mountain spotted fever. But it's
that's something.
Yeah, you know, it's once again, it's one of those diseases that seems like the disease is borne by ticks, or especially virulent. You know, I had a friend back east, one of my killifish friends, and he actually got bit by a tick and had Lyme's disease. And he said, you know, once again, debilitating, you know, muscles and pain and you just weak. Some of these diseases are, you know, they're really scary. You know, it's when you look at some of these things like mosquitoes, filariasis, I believe that's sleeping sickness. You never see what that stuff does to a person, you know?
Yeah,
it's,
I've read up on that. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Also,
and
there's always, too, fleas come in a variety of sizes, don't they?
Yeah, fleas are interesting, too, you know.
Ticks, I said fleas, but I meant ticks. Ticks come in a variety of sizes. You know, you can get the tiny, tiny little ones, and some of them get as big as your thumb when they're engorged, don't they?
we have both types out here in the Southwest. Matter of fact, ticks are our biggest problem. They really are.
Oh,
right here.
Lucky.
My yard has a tick problem. I will be the first to say that because we've had dogs. And we do have, in the summertime, I've seen some of our plants just covered with ticks. We're trying to latch onto a dog or something, but we keep our dog sprayed and with tick collars.
Any birds that are native that eat them, Ken?
Yes. We get to watch a lot of the sparrows. There's a little bird called the curved-billed thrasher, and they go along picking up the ticks and stuff, you know, collecting them and feeding on them. You'll see them turning over leaves and in the garden areas. There's a lot, and this year here in New Mexico, it's predicted that there's going to be 2/3 more mosquitoes, almost a 60% increase, in ticks this year. 60%
wow.
increase over last year. And
a wet winter?
Wet and warm. Our winter did not get down, I don't think, much below the teens. This year, which is warm for us.
Right. So,
nothing
was killed off.
Nothing was killed off. The ground never froze. You know, so.
That's something that happens with the climate change that we're experiencing at the moment, isn't it?
I believe so. Now, one thing I've noticed about this area here, the ground never really does freeze unless here much anyway. That's kind of interesting, you know, because the winters here are short anyway. That's one of the reasons I moved here to the Southwest here was because of the winters. It's springtime here for us here in New Mexico, while back east in the Midwest, people still get a cold snow, et cetera. We're blooming here. But with the blooming, it's bringing out all these things like this, like as I mentioned, the ticks are starting to stir now. We've actually been killing several already. They're coming, Ken. They're coming. but these things, you know, once again, the diseases that ticks, infest us with, you know, they're insidious diseases. And the bad thing about these creatures, you know, a lot of times you don't know you have a tick on you until it's, too late.
Yes, they don't make any noise, do they? They don't let you know that they're there. They just very quietly burrow into you, and they must have an anticoagulant too, do you think?
Yes, they do. And once again, now some interesting, some of these insects, or these parasites that feed on us, they'll actually produce a... chemical that acts as a anesthetic.
All right. Mhm.
Yeah. Actually, a creature I know that's really good for doing that. That's a leech.
Right. Yeah. Not exactly an insect, but still, it does. It's that type of feeding mechanism, isn't it?
It's an annelid, annelid worm, you know, related to the common earthworm. And the leeches are interesting. Compared to some of these other bloodsuckers, you know, leeches have actually been, there's a species called the medicinal leech. They're actually used today in hospitals for surgery where they've reattached missing fingers and limbs and stuff, you know, other parts, because they have an anticoagulant, and they will actually suck the blood out of these areas to keep the swelling down to help a healing of these reattached body parts. And I know that's fascinating.
It is, actually.
Yeah.
That's something you can use to use their nature to help us.
Yeah, and I do understand that these leeches are sterile raised, you know, so that they're not don't have any kind of critters on them, you know. But Ken, I one time leeches are one of those creatures that give me the willies, you know, and it does. It takes a lot to give me the willies.
But, I hate them myself.
Oh, one of them nasty old things, you know, sucking on me with both ends, you know, and he's gnawing with his little teeth that they have, you know, and starting to spill up all my blood.
And, of course, we both like collecting fish in the wild, and leeches are just one of those things that happen, that, isn't it, really?
Well, one of probably the worst times, and I many times I've been come up with a leech, but this one time, was when I was living out that little farmhouse out in the country I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And down the road from me, about a half mile or so, was this cool little stream. And it flowed between two roads, kind of catty-cornered, maybe about a half mile or so to where its source was. So, but I like collecting fish in it because it had some headwater fish in it. Some of the ones, you know, that move up these headwater streams. I had... there was green sunfish in it, had green darters, greenside darters, Johnny darters, a couple little minnow types, and some other neat critters that was living in it. And I remember wading upstream from the one bridge to the other. I'd rode my bike down to this thing, just a little ways from their house, and collecting some cool stuff. I was having a good time. One of the cool algae there was an algae called Hydrodictyon. It had these big, long, giant cells that were probably 2 to 3 millimeters in length, each cell. And they formed these nets, sometimes called water net. And as I came back, there's really cool algae. And but as I was coming back, I come to the bridge, got back up. And interestingly, I didn't want to get my socks wet this time. I'd rolled my pant legs up and just wore my tennis shoes in, and from the water line down to the shoe line, my ankles were completely covered with leeches, both of them.
All I can say, Ken, is I'm glad it was you and not me.
Ken, can you imagine there's about 6 inches of leg there all the way around. I was just completely covered, every square centimeter, with a leech on it. I started rubbing them things off of me, man. I was freaking out. I was like, oh, my God. You know, I mean, there was so many.
Hey, guys. You guys
yes.
have a caller. What do you want me to do?
Please ask him to go to the chat room.
I'm in the chat room. So if he wants to come in on the chat room and ask his question, I'll certainly relay it to Ken, and we'll discuss it.
Will you tell them how to come in on the chat room, Ken, right now?
Yeah,
sure.
Go to www.naturestalkshow.com, and I believe the live chat button pops right up, doesn't it, Ken?
Yeah, it's on the right-hand side. There's a little chat box there. Down. It's called Quick Chat. You'll see it. It's just down a little bit, and I'm in there and just waiting, so... Come on in and ask a question, and we'll address whatever query you have.
Yeah, and thank you very much. Appreciate the listening. And that's where we ask all of our listeners, if you have questions or comments, please go to our live chat room and join in there. And you can also talk with other people as well that join in on live chat. And we have we do get some great questions from our listeners there. So we really don't field calls that much because... we've had some crank callers, and I'm not in the mood for crank callers. So we're trying to bring something, serious information, especially about these mosquitoes and ticks and stuff, because people are going to be going out in the wild. And we want to bring these issues to light, you know, because, as Ken mentioned, he had dengue fever, and it's not fun. So thank you very much.
I wouldn't, as I said, I wouldn't reckon... wish it on anyone, not even my worst enemy.
Yeah.
So that's, what have we done? We've done mosquitoes and ticks. There are certainly other insects. Even flies bite you, don't they?
You know, one of the worst flies that I've ever been attacked by is a deer fly.
Mm-hmm. And those big assholes, they've got big mouths, and I think they can take a fair chunk of skin off you.
Their bite hurts. There's no other way around saying it. When you get bit by a deer fly, it stings. And I remember many times almost being driven away from riverbanks. We'd go collecting fish, and the deer flies would start swarming around you, you know, just dozens of them. And many times we'd take a 10-inch net with us and just swirl it around our heads, and, you know, back and forth. And you'd end up catching these things, you know. Then we'd drown them there in the river, let them, their bodies float down.
And that become food for the fishes.
Yeah, and now those guys to me seem like a really dumb fly. for listeners, I'm an old hippie. I've had long hair for a long time. When you see me, you'll be going, "Oh my gosh!" You know, the old style. But one of the great things about long hair is it traps these bugs before they can get to your neck. I don't know how many times my neck's been saved because of my hair, you know, from these insects wanting to dig in. And I'd watch my buddies with their short hair, and they'd be swatting these deer flies left and right, and I'd just be knocking them out of my hair because they were not going to get to my neck or my ears. And but these things, they're another nasty insect. You know, it's funny, but right at the moment, I hate to say this, I'm drawing a blank on their lifestyle. I do know the adults feed, and I think both sexes might feed with these, Ken.
Yeah. I know in Australia, well, where I lived anyway, there's nothing that's the equivalent of a deer fly down there that I know of. And I was very surprised when I came up here to North America and ran across them the first time. I just thought, my goodness, that's a big fly, and all of a sudden it bit me. Because flies don't bite you in Australia.
Yeah, they annoy you.
But I'd never been bitten by a fly before coming here, and I didn't want to get bitten again.
they hurt. And now, interesting, one of the differences that we noticed between the habitat of the deer fly and mosquitoes is that the deer flies preferred the more open grassy fields and the sunnier fields, and they just start swarming around you. Now, I had fun with deer flies one time, Ken, actually. Got the little deer fly revenge, if you might, if you will.
Yeah.
And now, I got had the opportunity one time to go visit the Okefenokee Swamp. And deer flies down there, they were thick. Oh, man, they were torturing us all the way as we hiked around the paths and stuff where we could check out the swamp. They had these nice, really cool towers that you could climb up into and that overlooked the swamp. And I remember climbing this big old tower, got to the top, and really beautiful view, you know, checking out over the Okefenokee. But deer flies were up there, and they were still attacking me. Now, as I mentioned, deer flies and long hair, they don't mix too good, so it's easy to smack them, you know, and stun them. And what I do, I pull a wing off. You ever pulled a wing off a fly? You know, because I got to admit, when you try to feed on this smorgasbord here, there's a high price to pay for the meal, okay? Yeah, it's, if you get away with it, you're lucky. But anyway, I was taking those deer flies that was attacking me and flipping them over the edge of the tower, watching them fall down, and dragonflies were coming out and grabbing them out of the air as they were falling.
Wow.
So, I was sitting there, I must have fed a couple hundred of these suckers, you know, to these dragonflies, you know, just by smacking them and throwing them over the edge.
Yeah, and I guess if they ever did get all the way down into the swamp or whatever, the fish would certainly eat them, wouldn't they?
Oh, there was all kinds of bugs all the way down and things, and yeah, there was frogs and tadpoles, and, you know, the Okefenokee Swamp was a great place. And I do have to mention, I believe the deer flies were more of a problem down there than any other thing. We had to watch out for ticks while we were down there, but we really didn't get into too much tick area. Now, I believe the tick area that I mostly deal with, besides here in New Mexico, was the woods back in some place in Wisconsin, Indiana, and around like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've never been into some of the woods far east where Lyme's disease can be fairly prevalent.
I went into our provincial park here. It's like a state park, national park, and mm-hmm. I was just walking through one day, and I happened to see a tick crawling on me.
Wow.
So I very gently flicked him off. He hadn't bit me yet, so it was just lucky that I saw him.
Yeah.
Tiny little thing. I'm used to bigger ticks from Australia. Now I know what to look for up in North America, so I'm prepared. But he was little, and he was just looking for a place to bite me, I think.
Yeah, probably going to crawl up under your armpit or something. That's where they really love to go, too. And now, another little cousin, more annoying than anything, although I really got to admit, Ken, I hated the way these little critters attacked a human. But that's a little critter called a chigger. You ever heard of a chigger?
I have heard of them. I didn't know what they were until I came here.
Yeah, that's another one of our little. Isn't it funny? You think
you got such interesting species here in North America?
Don't we know? Yeah, growing up as a kid back in Indiana, you know, we had to watch over them stupid chiggers, you know. And summertime and fall was always the worst time to get those damn things. And we always got them around your pants line. It seemed that's where they'd burrow in. Now, chiggers are a little mite for our listeners out there, a little tiny mite. You can barely see them with the eye. And they burrow into your skin down in just below your skin and feed on your blood. And gory does it itch. And
so they don't have the anesthetic.
No, and your body tries to fight that out. And also, Ken, they don't attack in one or twos. They attack, you know, you get like 50 or 60 or more of them little suckers.
Wow.
Now, one of the things I always found is probably the best plant to get a chigger from, and that's the wild carrot back east. They're also called Queen Anne's Lace. Now, you wade through a Queen Anne's Lace patch or something, more than likely you'll get chiggers from. They seem to like that plant to hunt their mammalian quarry.
Wow.
Yeah. And now to get rid of chiggers, what we would do is we'd get the fingernail polish, and you'd put a little dot of fingernail polish over every little chigger bite. And that would clog clog their hole, their air hole they have, and they would suffocate.
Okay.
And your body would just come right out in a couple of days.
Wow.
But the itch, though, and, oh, man, like I said, and because they burrowed into your skin, under your skin, you know, they could be, drive you nuts.
Wow. I'm glad to say that I've never experienced them, and I don't want to either.
You're lucky. I've experienced them many, many summers in a row, many, many in a row.
Another one we get down in Australia is sandflies. They're tiny, tiny little flies that bite you. Now, I will admit that there are flies that bite you in Australia, but the ordinary flies don't. These little things, you can barely see them with the naked eye, but if you're down at the beach, they particularly like tidal areas, like swampy areas, I guess, mangrove areas. And the best way to get rid of them is to jump in the water.
Yeah. You know what that sounds like? That sounds like our no-see-ums.
That's what my wife, Lisa, said when I was describing sandflies to her. She said, that sounds like a no-see-um.
Yeah, those are a little teeny tiny biting fly, too, you know, that I bite the living heck out of you. I've been bit by them too, you know. And they, once again, it's like there's a bunch of them attacking. It's not just one or two. These things come in little tiny swarms, and so you're getting attacked by all these little teeny tiny guys, you know.
Well, there's all these insects that have evolved, actually, to prey on other animals by this method, haven't they?
Oh, man. You know, and, you know, there's some other critters out there that's pretty bad, too. I believe there's some biting bugs. Here, I'm trying to think, is there any blood-sucking of the bugs? Because I know the hemipherans are really, they're parasitic of a lot of plants. That's the
of course,
the shield bugs,
another one that
things.
Affects
bugs.
Would be bed bugs, wouldn't it?
Yeah, bed bugs. Now, that's another nasty bug. I was living in Clovis at the time, and the landlady, her sister, decided that she wanted to bring a couch to us. And
mm-hmm.
at the time, I stayed with my brothers, so I was kind of using the couch to sleep on. And this couch she brought had bed bugs in it. And the first night I slept on it, I got eaten alive. I was so, I was so upset, you know. Biting little red chicken bites all over, you know. And once again, bed bugs can transmit diseases. They're not as prone, I don't think, as others, some of these others. But bed bugs are an interesting thing. Is you know, they feed on human blood. But I don't think they actually stay on the body. I think they live into the, you know, live in the blankets and bedding and like that.
Mm. Yeah, I believe they come out. When you're there at night, obviously.
Yeah.
And as you say, prey on you and then depart, having in their fill.
Now, to me. A nasty insect. I don't know. This one here, you know, I think there was even a little play toy or something of it called the cootie. But that is, of course, head lice.
Yes, and they're found all over the world, including Australia. I can assure you, my children from Australia have been sent home a couple of times with lice, and it's just as hard to get rid of the ones down there as it is to get rid of the ones up here. My daughter's been sent home up here in North America because there's been a lice outbreak in the class too.
We've had them here in our schools out here in New Mexico, back in Indiana where I was going to school, so it happens. Now, interesting thing about head lice is mostly likely it's all one species. And here's the interesting thing about it. It evolved with us humans. It is our parasite. Belongs to us.
Aren't we lucky?
Aren't we? it is. It's a full-on human parasite. It only feeds on humans. And interestingly enough, there's a close relative of it that actually feeds on the chimpanzee. So we inherited our lice back from the common ancestor of ourselves and chimpanzees.
And, of course, it evolved to be species-specific.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And another interesting thing is the it seems as if, likely that the, I believe, that the DNA evidence also supports, you know, when our species diversified, the DNA of the head lice. They also support that, you know, because they show that they diverged at the same time. Kind of fascinating.
I wonder,
you know,
if all the previous incarnations of man, like the Neanderthals and Cro-Magnons and all, if they had their own specific species.
Well,
of lice attached to them.
We can probably take the take a modern head louse today and trace it. You know, like I said, we can trace its ancestry back through our ancestors, all the way to the common ancestor of the chimp. So I would imagine as humans evolved, you know, these things were evolving as well.
Wow.
Yeah. Then there's the body louse. Now, I might, you know, I've never, I knew somebody that had those critters once. Yeah, but they're, once again, another creature that.
Crabs?
Crabs, yes. Yeah. That's another parasite that has evolved with us humans too. So it's and it seems to be related to the head louse. So it's kind of interesting.
Very specific, isn't it?
But it, yeah. Now this is kind of interesting when you think about it. That on the human body, that our body's big enough that we can actually evolve two habitats for bugs to feed on.
And they're very successfully too, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. There's that's one thing about these creatures. They're still going strong.
And they're not prejudiced. They'll attack anyone.
They will. I've even had my time dealing with the blue shampoo. You know. So once you know it, but. It's interesting how these outbreaks happen with kids, because kids, you know, they play with each other and they're it's easy for them to exchange hats or touch hair and innocent exposure. But,
yes, I suppose the Middle Ages would have been perfect for life. That would have been their heyday, wouldn't it?
I believe the powdered wigs was actually invented to help combat lice infestations back in the Middle Ages.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, because, just people getting, you know, so close together, you know, living so close together, the lifestyle's different, cleanliness was a lot different than today, and you know, so... I mean, there's a lot of buggy people. You know, and this is kind of interesting, too, when we talk about those kind of bugs, but we also have other insects that live among, like, on our eyebrows. You know, they're so small that we don't even notice them, you know, but they feed upon the dead skin, on our eyebrows and other parts of us.
Wow.
So
you just don't realize it, do you?
You just don't realize
seen
it,
little
yeah.
micro mites and everything living on... Bats are quite well known for having little mites on them, aren't they? And birds.
And we have them too.
Wow.
Yeah. Even even Donald Trump's got them.
That's just too easy. I won't say a word.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? We don't want to get ourselves in trouble. You're fired.
it's quite amazing that all these little insects have evolved. And as we keep saying, they're very successful. They do their job so well.
And
that they're virtually impossible to eradicate, aren't they?
Well, they've been with us since... the first organism could start feeding on another one, you know, Ken. That's how one of the interesting things. Oh my gosh, who was it that came on our show? We were talking about the evolution of parasites in fishes, and he says it seems like every species of fish has its own endemic parasites, belongs to just it, each one. And that's the way it is with us. You know, we've evolved our own species of animals that feed upon us. There are some like the mosquitoes that aren't too picky. There are others like the head louse that is, you know, absolutely picky and won't feed on anything else but a human. You know, and but these parasites, you know, the bad thing about them is that they transmit diseases. They cause a lot of damage, you know. The parasites that feed on plants cause a lot of crop damage. You know, it's just something that we have lived with for millions of years, you know, and they're going to... now, this is the interesting thing about these parasites, too, is as we develop new ways to kill them and push them back, evolution is finding a way for these things to adapt, and mosquitoes are becoming more resistant to pesticides. Diseases are becoming more resistant to different chemicals that we use to kill them, and that's evolution. And that's what it's all about, Ken. That's what it's all about, evolution.
Right. And, of course, there's more parasites than we have talked about tonight, and that's why we've decided to do a little mini-series on parasites, isn't it? On monsters of nature programs.
Well, to me, they're true monsters. You know, these things, you know, they may be small, but they're insidious. And next month on the show, I think it might be interesting to talk about some of the insidious parasites that infest our bodies, like flukes and worms and some of those things, because those really give me the heebie-jeebies.
Yes, and again, they're a very successful group of organisms, aren't they?
Well, let's take just a quick second here. Look at the flatworms. You know, look at some of the flatworms in the ocean. You know, and then look at what some of them that have invaded us. I mean, I've seen flatworms, parasites. We had a dog once that had flatworms inside it. And my God, Ken, they're just nasty, ugly, whitish pink things that just, you know, just. I've seen a hog farm one time. I helped friends worm hogs one time, and I couldn't eat pork for over 3 or 4 years because of these worms that were flushed out of these hogs. Big old roundworms. So we'll talk about those parasites on our next Monsters of Nature. And we had a lot to talk about there. For our listeners, if there's more you want to look about on these creatures, there's a whole lot out there to research. Back when I was studying zoology, I actually read a book on nothing but the mosquito that was almost 1,000 pages long. Nothing but the mosquito. Everything you wanted to know about it. So there's a lot of information. So, at any rate, I guess that takes us up to the top of the hour here for these parasites.
Certainly has.
Yeah, show went fast. Now, before we do some quick show announcements, Ken, we got to tell our listeners about you and Mary and Tom popping up at the NEC conference here coming up next month. I was a guest speaker there.
Yes, we're
really
looking forward to it. It'll be the first public appearance as such for Nature's Talk Show. And we're just looking forward to meeting all our listeners. If you're in the area, if you're at the convention, come up, say good day. We don't bite very hard anyway, unlike the insects we've been talking about tonight.
Yeah.
And come up, say hello, and I'll talk to anyone. So, talk to me about anything you want.
Well, everybody knows me. No, I talk to anyone, too. You know, I'm the guy in the shopping line that'll talk to you. And one nice thing about me on an airplane, I do try to have a good, make an interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
if you're in the area, come out and say hello. As I say, we'll talk to you about anything. It's a great convention to attend, as Ken will attest. He's been a speaker at NEC, and great people. The auction is huge on the Sunday. There's plenty of great speakers. You'll learn a lot there. There's a vendor and manufacturer's hall. That's where we'll be, actually, in that room. So come along and say hello, as I say, and find out about all the new things coming out that will assist you in your aquarium keeping.
Mm-hmm. And also, I've donated some artwork for Nature's Talk Show, so you, our listeners there, can get some great artwork, too. We're raffling it off, so buy some raffle tickets and win you one of the some really cool paintings. Now, Ken, one of the coolest groupings I think I sent to you was the lobe fins. Original, we talked about those on one of our show, both species that of the paintings I sent. So that's going to be a fun one there, I think.
Hey, they're great. I've got them in front of me right now as I'm speaking to you, actually. And all of the paintings that you sent up, there's a really nice penguin family shot. There's, say, the lobe fins. And then there's a couple of anabandids there that are outstanding, actually. I think they're wonderful.
So get to the NEC conference there and win you one of these.
Yeah, buy some tickets. There'll be a reasonable price. $2 each, $3 for $5, I think we're selling them for. So grab yourself some tickets. Any money that's raised from that is plowed straight back into the show. And do yourself a favor. Get yourself some nice Ken McKeegan original artwork.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Well, real quick here then, I want to mention here real that you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes. You can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/NTS and click on the follow button there. We appreciate you when you do that there for our show. We also want to invite you to go to our website, check up and sign up for our newsletter, visit our store for coffee mugs and all kinds of great stuff, visit our chat room. As we mentioned, Ken Borman goes in there, and he works in the chat room, so we can do questions and comments if you like. Listen to our archive shows. Please, if you have any suggestions for us, let us know, any of us at our staff, because Ken and I and Mary and the rest of us are happy to bring shows to you. Click on our PayPal button on the website, too, to help if you want to donate to the show. And as always, we want to thank everybody for joining us here on Nature's Talk Show. Ken, anything else you'd like to mention?
I think you covered it pretty well there, Ken.
All right. Well, join us tomorrow night, friends, here on Fine Art of Paleontology. We're going to be talking about the animals and plants of the Abbo Formation. You cannot find this information on the Internet. I have been working it for several years, so join Ken and myself tomorrow night, and you can get straight from the horse's mouth the Abbo Formation of the Lower Permian of Central New Mexico. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful evening. Bye-bye.
Good night from me.
Join us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and listen to us at www.naturestalkshow.com.